This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, ICANN staff, and welcome everyone to the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN Accountability, Workstream 2 Human Rights Subgroup, our 25th meeting on the 21st of March at 1900 UTC, our first meeting after ICANN 58 in Copenhagen. We have a full schedule today with a lot of things to discuss because quite some progress has been made, and let's hope that we can continue to do so as well. But before we go into that, is there anyone who is on the audio bridge who is not in the Adobe Connect room? Could they please make themselves known so that we're so that we can take them into the archives? No one there? Excellent. I have not gotten any apologies. So maybe ICANN staff has, but I haven't heard of any. ICANN staff, did we miss anyone? No, I don't think so.
Brenda, I've not heard of any either yet. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brenda. Great to hear you. And does anyone have an update on their statement of interest? No updates to statement of interest? Then that's great. Then let's give a short update of what happened at ICANN 58. Of course, we had our face-to-face there, where many of you, even though not all, could be present. I think it became rather clear that we are under some time constraint, and general mood was, I think I can describe people feeling that we should start working towards the end. So that's something good to keep in mind. Next to having had a plenary meeting, we've had a call which was facilitated by the GUC Working Group on Human Rights and International Law with a member of the UN Working Group on Business and Human Rights. And the name of this person was Anita Ramastrey. And we've had a friendly exchange in which explained Ms. Ramastrey a bit more about ICANN situation that she had followed, but a while before the transition, and she kindly pointed us to the RUGI principles, and gave a very introductory overview of that. And the UN, and she offered on behalf of the UN Working Group on Business and Human Rights their support for our subgroup or the plenary, whenever that need be. So we have that offer of support. We have shortly had a very short discussion on the list. The initial moment when we reached out to the UN Working Group was very much in the beginning of the process, so I am not sure how useful it would be to have their direct input into the working group now, because we would probably spend quite a lot of time bringing them up to speed and repeating discussions that we've had here quite well with also a great group of experts. So I propose that we informally ask Ms. Ramastrey and potentially the UN Working Group on Business and Human Rights to give their feedback during the public comment period once we get there. And I felt that that was also a sentiment that was a bit shared on the mailing list, but if others feel differently about it, feel free to say so. No, not. So then I will thank Ms. Ramastrey for that, and tell them I will inform them during the public comment period, and then we would greatly look forward to get their input then, and then we also have that documented and we follow the official process of the CCWG, as I think is the best way forward. Because else, why would we have such procedures? So, for the rest of the agenda, we have the first reading of the considerations document prepared by the drafting team in Copenhagen, and any other business. Does anyone else have anything to add to the agenda? I say no, I say yes, here we go. Excellent. So here I think we can also continue to build on the great experience that we've had working with the drafting team. So I'll ask a volunteer from the drafting team to take us through the work. And let's start with the second paragraph, not the preamble, because we read that now a lot of times and we know that by now. So who would like to, of the drafting team, I can ask to volunteer to give a short reading and overview of this second paragraph for this consideration? Greg, Tatiana, David, Anne, Matt. Oh, Anne has her hand up. Anne, please come in.
Yes, thank you, Niels. And I think, first of all, procedurally, I did want to apologize to you personally in relation to not making it quite clear enough regarding the, I guess, the minority position that I held on a couple of issues. I certainly do appreciate your adding these to the discussion today. But with respect to your particular question here, we did have a very good meeting, I thought, both on Saturday night and on Sunday morning, and thank you for your time in facilitating that. Here, with this paragraph that's been changed, we had a lot of discussion regarding the RUGI principles and how certain aspects of those might be, you know, valuable to the community going forward. There, you know, again, this is a matter on which the group has not achieved consensus, I guess you would say, but we did agree on this introductory language. When I say introductory, I mean in relation to the community's further policymaking processes. So I think you were doing the editing during the meeting, and I think everyone agreed on, with respect to the guiding principles, that there were at least certain aspects of the guiding principles could be considered as a useful guide in the process of applying human rights core value. These are certain guiding principles that may, there are certain guiding principles that may not be suitable for ICANN and others that might be applicable depending on the circumstances. However, it's beyond the scope of this document to provide a detailed analysis of the guiding principles and their application or not in particular situations. Whoops, the text is getting away from me. Sorry. In any case, conflict between any guiding principle and an ICANN bylaw provision or article of incorporation must be resolved in favor of the bylaw or article. The use of the guiding principles as potential guidance has to be carefully considered by each SO and AC, as well as ICANN, the organization. So,
I am. There was a suggestion in the chat, and I think it would be good that we go at this paragraph by paragraph. I know that there's the part at the end that I would definitely also have sufficient time to discuss, but let's go at it at a bit of the beginning. Would that be okay?
Oh, I thought we were just looking at the paragraphs that had changed since the last draft. Sorry.
Yeah, we also changed the first one, but that's okay. But
we
I think
did.
You gave
okay.
all the
well, you
already gave
it. Yeah.
You already gave a great overview, but let's do first things first. So at the start of the consideration, so we'll start with the consideration. Consider which specific human rights conventions or other instrument, if any, should be used by ICANN in interpreting and implementing the human rights bylaw. So in the text that will follow now, we had some comments last time, excellent ones by Paul, that told us we should make our the text more consistent, and we've been trying to do so, and now it reads as follows. ICANN, as a non-state private entity, is not a party to any human rights declaration, convention, or instrument. However, ICANN, the community, and the organization could refer to any of the widely adopted human rights declarations, conventions, and other instruments, while taking human rights into account in its policies and operations. It should be noted that the bylaw was not written with one specific human rights declaration, convention, or other instrument in mind. So I think this text is now a lot clearer and a lot more consistent, and we've also integrated the differentiation that we discussed also in the plenary between the organization and the community. And there, and I have to note and or just repeat that the board is part of the organization. So I see Paul Toomey is typing. I hope that this this paragraph makes it through the Paul Toomey test or lives up to Paul Toomey expectations. Greg's hand is up. Greg, please come in.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. I'm thinking, one of the things I've been thinking about in, you know, looking at this document, and which I haven't done quite as much as I should have since we come back, since suffering the after effects of Copenhagen, is where, if and where we might put a reference to our principle of no cherry picking amongst human rights within an instrument. And I would like to at least put a marker in that it might make sense to put it in this paragraph. I know that in this draft it may be referred to elsewhere, and elsewhere may also be a good place for it. But as I'm looking at this one, as we're talking about conventions or instruments, referring to them, we may want to underline that they should be referred to in their entirety and not just by selecting particular rights out and ignoring others. Just a thought. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Greg, for that comment. And since that is also a concern that Anne has raised, I've been looking at this issue as well a bit, and then I've been digging into our past conversations and agreements, and then I found actually some text in Annex 6, namely paragraph 11 of Annex 6 of the CCWG Accountability Workstream 1 report, and I will put this paragraph in the chat here. It reads that the CCWG accountability also disagrees with any attempt to single out any specific human rights in the proposed draft bylaw text on the basis that human rights cannot be selectively mentioned, emphasized, or applied since they are universal, indivisible, interdependent, and interrelated. So since we already have that text, and that is also within our mandate, it might make, and we have not repeated that in the framework of interpretation, it might make sense to simply use that last part. Human rights cannot be selectively mentioned, emphasized, or applied since they are universal, indivisible, interdependent, and interrelated. So is that something that could or would work? Or maybe that's something to put on the, on the scratch board to see whether that would fit in. But I see Paul Toomey's hand is up. Paul, please come in.
Hi, Niels. Hi, everybody. Thanks very much. First of all, Niels, I want to make an apology for my input on the list a while ago. The Word document I was reading from didn't have as much detail as the PDF version had, so I missed some of these paragraphs. But I appreciate you picking up my main point. I'm asking a question that I don't have a solution for, and I put it on the chat, which is, I do appreciate this wording. I'm wondering if however it leaves it open to somebody litigating ICANN in a US district court saying, well, because you could choose any instrument, in convention, you should have chosen the one I wanted you to choose. And maybe it's a question to put to the lawyers as to how you draft that such that, you know, I think it is right. I think your description in this first paragraph is a correct description of ICANN's sort of legal position vis-a-vis human rights declarations and conventions. But I wonder if there's a way of limiting the risk that somebody's going to say, because you could have chosen anyone, you should have chosen the one I think. Does that make sense?
Thank you very much, Paul. As far as I understand, this is a positive obligation we're making, so I think it would be hard to litigate against it, but I would not be against asking that the lawyers, and I definitely think that the lawyers will be asking that themselves. So that's something we could take with us. Let's make note of that. I see David McCauley is in the list. David, please come in.
Thank you, Niels. It's David McCauley for the record. I have a little bit of a twist on this. I tend to agree with what Paul just said, but also with respect to the language, Niels, that you pasted in from Annex 6, the language that talks about cannot be selectively mentioned, emphasized, or applied is not itself a declarative statement of what applies, but rather that's an explanation for why the group disagreed with any attempt to single things out. And so I worry about the word applied. To me, the framework of interpretation and the considerations are always secondary to the language in the bylaw, the core value. And we did there cherry pick or discriminate. We said we're going to live or respect human rights that are internationally recognized and come under an applicable law. So there is a bit of discrimination there. And so when the language that you then suggested that human rights cannot be selectively mentioned, emphasized, or applied, first of all, I have a problem with the word applied, but I would say that there should be some introductory language that says, you know, in the context of considering various instruments, you can do these things. You know, ICANN can consider whatever it wants, but with respect to its obligation to respect, that's limited to internationally recognized human rights under applicable law. Thank you.
Perfectly fine with me. But maybe we should also not discuss this in theory, but perhaps later when it comes up as a suggestion in the text and not front load that discussion. But I see Cavus hand is up. Cavus, please come in.
Yes, Nils. I thought tonight would be a simple meeting. But now I consider that colleagues, one after the other, bring elements for modifications. Therefore, I could not take this meeting as a first reading at all. All these modifications must be put in, discussed, and agreed upon. So everyone has new ideas. Someone says that not applied. Someone says that cannot be considered. So there are new ideas, and I don't think that we will get out of this human rights interpretation maybe up to end of this year if the situation is like this. Nils, you should have some authority to not allow changes come after the changes. At the beginning, I heard that we had a good meeting on Sunday. We had some sort of agreement. We had some sort of crazy consensus, but now modification after modification, with all due respect to the colleagues, I cannot agree with these modifications at this stage unless you start to prepare a new draft and put all the modifications, one for the others, and then we consider them. So I don't understand. There are three modifications proposed, and in the chat some others. So it's difficult to follow this discussion. It's very, very difficult. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. Up to now, it is only very high-level discussion, so we still have the full text that you have in front of you and that you have read, but definitely if we will make big changes, then we'll need to make a new text that we spread for first reading. But let's see how far we can get today. Greg, send us up. Greg, please come in.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. A couple of brief thoughts in response to Paul.
Paul's concern, I think this is really where the applicable law limitation actually is very helpful, because I think that regardless of what human rights instrument you make reference to, if somebody's trying to bring in a human rights instrument that goes beyond applicable law into, you know, some other form of desire or concept, it's going to be beyond the remit of the bylaw anyway. And it'd probably be too much to hope for that within the bounds of applicable law, there's probably much less difference between various instruments. But there probably isn't a huge amount of variation, you know, within the bounds of applicable law about what different instruments that cover the same sorts of things will cover, and to the extent that there are instruments that are not, that cover different aspects, such as those that cover labor, per se, as opposed to the more universal issues and wide-ranging ones, that there isn't going to be necessarily a conflict. Of course, I've never looked at a battle of the human rights declarations, and maybe there would be something there, but one can never worry too much about what lawyers will do, and if we were to choose a single declaration, somebody else might still argue that we chose the wrong one and that there were reasons that shouldn't have been chosen. So I think that it's, while it's a realistic concern, I think the likelihood of it causing real problem is probably relatively limited. I think that the, and for that reason, I'm not too concerned. And as far as what David McCauley said, I think that we can, if we do, you know, end up revising the text, I think those, the two concepts he's dealing with are not ultimately in conflict. I think the point is that within the bounds of applicable law and within the bounds of the bylaws, we have to consider all of the human rights that are expressed in an applicable instrument rather, and not, you know, pick some and leave some behind because we feel like it. And I think that's all that we're trying to say. It's not, the point is that we can't discriminate between human rights on the basis of support for some and not for others, desire to maximize some and minimize others. I don't think the point was ever that we had to, that we couldn't discriminate amongst them even if it went beyond the bounds of the bylaw. I think the point was that within the bounds of the bylaw, you have to take each human rights instrument as a full panoply of rights as they're expressed and not just pick your favorite. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that, Greg. So I think we've had a bit of a we had a bit of tasting of this topic, but I think that the first paragraph gets us pretty much where we are, and where we did not get it, I think, is addressed later as well. So I suggest we take that decision where it gets very concrete and continue to the next paragraph. Would everyone be okay with that? Greg's hand is up. Greg, please come in.
Sorry, old hand, no objection.
And please come in.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just agreeing. Niels, thank you. This is Anne, just agreeing to go on. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So we now get to the next part. And we have been rearranging and reshuffling, and I think making things also more consistent and clear here as well, because I have to commend the drafting team for that we've actually stopped adding text and made text more consistent and smaller, which I think means we're on very much on a good route. So let me read out where we are here. With regards to the UN Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights, no consensus was reached as to their suitability for interpreting the core value. However, with regards to the implementation of the core value, the UN Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights, or at least certain aspects of the guiding principles, could be considered as a useful guide in the process of applying the human rights core value. So to give a bit of explanation why we have this here, if we look up a bit, here we see the consideration asking for human rights conventions or instruments, if any, that should be used by ICANN in interpreting and implementing the human rights bylaw. So first we start with saying that there was no consensus reached on their suitability for interpreting the core value. However, with regards to the implementation of core value, the UN guiding principles, or at least certain parts of the UN guiding principles, should be considered as a useful guide in the process of applying their human rights core value. And then we continue. There are certain guiding principles that may not be suitable for ICANN and others that might be applicable, depending on the circumstances. However, it is beyond the scope of this document to provide a detailed analysis of the guiding principle and their application, or not, in particular situations. In any case, a conflict between any guiding principle and an ICANN bylaw provision or article of incorporation must be resolved in favor of the bylaw or article. The use of the guiding principles as potential guidance has to be carefully considered by each SONAC as well as ICANN, the organization. I see two hands are up. Greg, please come in.
That's a very old hand. Sorry. I stepped away.
Okay. Paul, please come in.
Thanks for that. I appreciate this paragraph. I would be suggesting, considering the what's said in the middle and the end of it, that the phrase where it says, however, with regards to the implementation of the core value, the UN guiding principles for business and human rights, or at least certain aspects of the guiding principles, I think it would be, I would be more comfortable about all the issues I've raised about agreements with potential entities, et cetera, on this list, if it was simply to say, however, with regard to implementation of the core value, at least certain aspects of the UN guiding principles for business and human rights could be considered.
Could you state your change again, Paul, because there was quite a bit of echo on the line.
Okay, let me. I'll just type it and put it into the chat is what I'm recommending.
Oh, sorry. Then we'll wait for it while we get that in the chat. Thank you very much, Paul. And in the meantime, we'll go to Cahoos. Cahoos, please come in.
Yes, Nils. Any proposal to change must be first put in the chat as a concrete proposal. We don't need explanation. We don't need 5 minutes of explanations because we all understand if the text proposed is a concrete proposal, then we will discuss that. If we need clarification, then we will clarify. I don't think that the people need to spend several minutes to explain then the proposal. Please ask concrete proposal for changes, only acceptable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cahoos. And indeed, the time is nice, so concrete proposals are good. I see Matthew's hand is up. Matthew, please come in.
Yes, thanks, Nils. This is useful, obviously, being a member of the drafting group. One sometimes gets too close to the language, and it's useful to have this review. I think Paul makes an interesting point. There, since it starts with, however, with regards to the implementation, etc., ends by saying, with a clause that says, could be considered as a useful guide, and then kind of go on to say, well, some of it might apply, some of it might not. So this notion of a useful guide actually is a bit awkward. So I think what one could do to shorten and make this a little bit more punchy and impactful, we could remove the clause that starts with could be considered a useful guide to the, and then just go straight from at least certain aspects of the guiding principles, and then go straight into the sentence that follows, where it says may not be suitable, may be suitable, etc. I might shorten it and make it a little bit more straightforward. Thanks.
Matthew, could you say that again or make that suggestion in the Google Doc? Saying it again would be easier now. Okay. And here is that for the live annotation. So we now have two proposals, one by Paul Toomey and one by Matthew Shears. So let's see how they compare. Paul is proposing, or at least certain aspect of the guiding principle to remove that part of the could be considered as a useful guide. Paul's to me in the chat says, Paul's hand is up. Paul, please come in. That's easier than me reading out your chat messages. Please come in.
I'm sorry if I'm causing confusion. What I'm suggesting is that there seems to be consensus amongst us that some certain aspects of the guiding principles could be a guide or could be applicable. I personally would be hesitant for us to say that the principles as a whole could be applicable. And I'm just a little worried the way it's presently written that it is well caveated, but I'm still a little concerned we don't send any signal to the community that, you know, we have a consensus that the whole document itself really is pretty okay. So I'm just, rather than sort of, I don't want us to be getting into we like chapter 3 but we don't like chapter 5, but I just don't want to send the signal that we're sending somehow that the principles as a whole are okay. And that's why I'm suggesting just putting that, just elevating that at least certain aspects of the principles is the wording we should use. If that's the wording, then I feel more comfortable about these issues I've been raising around the applicability of contracts to third parties.
Okay, but I'm also getting it a bit it is quite weak. The text is in there about the UN guiding principles and whether it might be useful and could be considered as a useful guide is already quite weak. So now we're going to say that some aspects could be considered. Is that the text that you're proposing? I haven't seen the edit proposal by Matthew yet in the Google Doc. I don't really see the one by Paul. Paul, could you perhaps make your suggestion in the Google Doc? Because right now what it
I'll
reads.
Do that now.
Okay, perfect, 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 perfect. And I see while Paul is doing that, and we can then go back read the alternatives. I see Anne is in the queue. Anne, please come in.
Yes, thank you, Neil. This is Anne for the transcript. And at first, I was thinking that deletion of that phrase didn't really change anything, but then I saw comments from both Avery and Cheryl stating that they felt that there was, it looks like that what they're saying is that they think there's an importance to keeping the word aspects in the draft. And I guess I'd like to hear more from Omri and Cheryl on that, because at first I thought that the suggestion didn't change the draft, but they seem to be saying that it does, and they went, if I'm understanding it correctly. And I definitely don't understand what Matthew's proposal was, so it'd be great if it could be clarified from Matthew, and I don't know what order to put those questions in, but I'm sure you do.
Okay, so that's a question to Avery and Cheryl, so I definitely invite them to get in the queue. And then I see Matthew and Paul are typing away, so once they're done, I'll read that out. But in between, I see Cavus is online. Cavus, please come in.
Yes, Neil, it is difficult to follow these discussions. There are proposals, counter-proposals, modification of proposals, not understanding proposals. We don't know where we are. Please ask the people to put for the paragraph, the whole paragraph, alternative one, X by Mr. X, alternative two by Mrs. Y, alternative three. We have to see the whole text. We cannot look at the part or piece of that because we have to read it, the entire text. So it is difficult to agree. And this meeting is quite unproductive. Non-productive, unfortunately. Please ask for the concrete proposal as separate alternative by Y, X, Z, and so on and so forth. It is difficult to follow this discussion. I thought that we have already have some sort of consensus, but now means that we're starting from the very beginning because of this guiding principle of Raji that no one agree or no one disagree totally. So please kindly ask for concrete proposals. As an alternative, full text, but not part of the text. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. I see that Avery and Cheryl have entered the line, and Paul Toomey has made a suggestion, so I propose that I read out Paul's suggestion and then go to Avery and Cheryl. So the sentence as rewritten by Paul would be, however, with regards to the implementation of the GORE value, at least certain aspects of the UN guiding principles for business and human rights could be considered as a useful guide in the process of applying the human rights GORE value. So that is the concrete proposal from Paul. And now let's go to the reflection on that from Avery. Avery, please come in.
Okay, this is Aubrey speaking. What I was going to say is probably gone by the by now, but I didn't think that the various rewordings of the sentence were really making any difference. It was basically a stacking of maybe really this might be considered type of language. But I like Paul's latest sentence. It seems clean. It seems to say what needs to be said. I very much agree with Cavus that having seen the three possibilities would have been useful, but if the only one left in contention is Paul's, I would say if it's there and it's written, that it's a good sentence.
Thanks so much, Avery. Cheryl, please come in.
Thank you, Neil. Cheryl, and you know, for the record, despite me trying to stay relatively quiet before morning coffee, you're going to make me speak instead of type. First of all, to reference Anne's point, was wondering why I certainly like the aspects. I like the ability to have that modifier, but I think we've moved past that point. And I think the record will show I've always liked the idea of only being able to say aspects or selective parts of that some of these principles should be applicable. So it's just consistent with my view all along. Again, I think I'm agreeing with Avery here in as much as I think the additional new text sentence with or without the at least that Matthew's asking about is a good sentence that I am not having a gut reaction to. So I think we probably have a concrete way forward with Paul's latest sentence. But I also do see Cavus's point and wanted to reinforce it as Avery did. Cavus, of course, does not have, I believe, the ability to be in the Google Doc where the live editing is happening. This is important polishing process, but it is one that we need to be careful, and it is difficult to do so, that we bring everyone along with. So I'm certainly respectful of Cavus's concerns here. It is an exercise in mental gymnastics as we do this, but we're damned close, if not there, if we start to consider Paul's last contribution in text or a variation, minor variation thereof. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. So I see that there is now a discussion of removing at least. I see there is some support in that, but I, as a not so native speaker, think that that would mean that not all guiding principles could be valid in implementation, right? And then we would be making a qualifying sentence. So what would we win with removing at least? And let me give the word to Paul, because Paul has done some great craft drafting here. So, Paul, please come in. Your hand has been up as well.
Well, Niels, as some version of a native speaker, the point that Tatiana and Greg and others are making, I think, is correct. If you leave the word at least in, it could be interpreted that it could be all of the clauses up to and including 100%. If you took the word at least out, then you said certain aspects, then you are probably signaling that less than 100%.
Yeah, so then we are saying it could never be 100%, right?
If we take out the word at least and it simply said certain aspects, then that would signal, I would think, less than 100%.
So we're saying later that we do not completely analyze it. So if there is we have agreed that some parts are useful, right? So why is removing at least important? Well, maybe Greg will speak to that. Greg, would you speak to that?
Sure. Greg Shatton, for the record, another version of a native speaker. I think that, you know, with the at least in there, there's a lot of tap dancing in the sentence, and it's kind of waffled. Sorry to be overly colloquial, too native a speaker, perhaps. And it really, I think, does become kind of an endorsement of the whole as a useful guide, and I think that implicit endorsement is beyond our consensus, and so I think that what I would say is that you know, certain aspects, we don't say which aspects, which leaves it to some other time for people to argue about which ones are useful and which ones are not, and especially in a, you know, given context. But I think that creating the impression that we do endorse the totality is troublesome. So I think that in any given circumstance, depending upon what you're dealing with at any given time, you're probably not going to apply every principle simultaneously in any case. So the whole thing still leaves quite a bit of ground for interpretation. I think the issue here is how strongly are we going to swing one way or the other in our cautious and open-ended statement about RUGI in implementation. I think taking out the at least is makes more sense to me as a place where I would feel comfortable. Thank you.
Okay. So I have removed at least. So, because that's a bit the sentiment I get from the room, and I am here to channel the room as a medium. So this is the text that we have, which I think reads pretty well. So let's go back to Paul Toomey, who has his hand up. Paul, please come in.
I'm sorry, that's an old hand, but I'm supportive of the new language.
Excellent. Thank you. And Cahoos, please come in.
Excuse me, Neil. What Cheryl said about me? He says that Cahoos is unable to do what? What was my disability in view of Cheryl? Does she have any right to judge whether I am able or I'm not able? Could you please kindly, please, Cheryl, wait. Kindly restate what you said about my ability. Thank you. In a clear and soft language. Slowly, what is the problem that you said that Cahoos is unable to do? What I am unable to do. I would be very happy if you described that. Thank you.
If I may, Niels.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Thank you, Niels. It's Cheryl Langdon-Orr for the record. And Cahoos, I was supporting your concern and criticism of not having written text and changes to written text available equitably to us all by the team, or at least most of the team, using live editing in the Google Doc. I am stating and did state that you have previously told us and other work teams that you are unable to access Google Docs for whatever reason, bandwidth, I don't know, I don't care. So I was recognizing a previous stated ability or lack thereof for you to be reading and operating in Google Docs. If my recognition of your previous statements is incorrect, I apologize, but it certainly probably affects more than you. I, for one, had to open up another computer so I could keep up. Is that clear, Cahoos?
Yes, it is clear, and thank you very much. Whether it was necessary to refer, but I thank you very much. Now it's clear. Now coming to the subject, I agree with the deletion of at least, because when you say at least certain, you give more than certain. So I have no problem. If the entire room is agree with the deletion of at least, take it out and agree with what Paul proposed and take out this portion and go ahead with the next one. Thank you.
Excellent. So we continue, and we actually made some points. Now we go to the first to the end of this part, which is the text suggested by Anne. Anne added, these bodies must also consider human rights grievance procedures to be implemented, such as request for reconsideration and independent review process, as well as any less formal steps to be taken prior to the invoking of either of these more formal procedures. I see Anne's hand is up. Anne, please come in.
Yes, thank you, Niels. I wanted to explain this comment. And it does springboard actually from one of the RUGI principles. I'll mention that two or three of those principles, two of them, I think, talk about the necessity of having good accountable grievance procedures in relation to human rights. This comment is made primarily in the interest of, and I know I've observed this several times on the list, good, clear corporate governance, because the board oftentimes has to reconcile differences in policy advice, you know, coming from different policy advisors that they use and consider, and that, you know, we all know how that works under the bylaws. So the language that was enacted that relates to the human rights core value specifically states that no one can file a request for reconsideration or an independent review, you know, unless and until this framework of interpretation comes into play. So it does seem to me to contemplate that requests for reconsideration and independent review process will be available remedies for the community. And I think that's all fine and very good. But within ICANN, I think that the community, as they go on through policymaking, needs to consider some less severe options for resolving, you know, human rights violations claims. I think that there are some internal procedures that could catch this much earlier and, very frankly, would result in, you know, much lower legal fees for ICANN. I think that what I'm trying to suggest here is that the community needs to consider things like a human rights complaint to the ombudsman as a basis, a human rights complaint maybe to the new complaints officer. I agree with your observation that what actually is developed there in less formal procedures would it's not up to us, but I do think it's incumbent upon us to, just in terms of clear corporate governance, to suggest some less formal, less expensive procedures, given that the change in the language that's already been enacted clearly implicates the use of these more formal procedures, the request for reconsideration and the IRP. I don't think we want the ICANN organization caught up in more and more, you know, formal RFRs and IRPs because they have.
And I think the point is clear. Maybe it's good to also hear others on the text, if you don't mind. So we have a queue forming. The first in the queue is Kafouz. Kafouz, please come in.
Yes, I have two comments. One is the use of the word must. These bodies must also consider. I want to replace must by something else. Because when you have consideration, you don't use must. Consideration. Therefore, you need to use another word, such as either should, or if somebody insists stronger, one could say these bodies also need to consider. This is the first proposal. Replace must by either should or by need. Second, I don't understand who decides the grievance procedures. You say that human rights grievance procedures. Which are the human rights procedure are grievance, and which part of the human rights are non-grievance? And who decide on that? So my question is, do we need grievance at all? These are the two comments and questions. Apart from that, I have no difficulty. Thank you.
Very, very clear, Kafouz. Thank you. And next in the line, we got David McCauley. David, please come in.
Thank you, Niels. It's David McCauley again. I think I agree with both Ann and Kafouz, or at least a large part of what they said. And what I'd like to note is that the bylaw provision that spoke implicitly about reconsideration requests and IRP is 27.2B, and it's very, as Ann pointed out, it's indirect. And it seems to me that it's in our interest, if we're going to start to address how IRP reconsideration requests apply, we should do it a little bit more directly. And I think that Ann's point about having a hierarchy would be a good one. You know, if we did want to say these do apply, you know, one, it's ICANN could always argue that if we don't address it directly, it's not invoked. But a hierarchy might be something we would want to consider. That is, you have to go to Ombudsman first. If you have a claim that ICANN has breached its obligation to respect internationally recognized human rights under applicable law, you might have to go to Ombudsman first, then to reconsideration request before you could bring an IRP. People are always welcome to go to a court if they think they have a case to take in court. So, and that's sort of what Cavusa was getting at, you know, what grievance procedures. So I think it might be nice to address this a little bit more directly. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Greg, please come in.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. First, I think 27.2B is just a second dormancy provision, except that it allows for some use for things that existed prior to the effectiveness of the FOI. I don't think there's any intent here to create any long-term role. This is only a transition rule regarding grievance procedures. And while I think it's a laudable goal to suggest that more lightweight procedures for human rights concerns be developed, or for concerns generally be developed, I don't think this is the time, the place, or the group to do it. And I would respectfully suggest that this sentence be removed. Apologies to those who think it should be here, but I think it's not the thing to say here now. And there are no human rights grievance procedures. RFR and IRP are not human rights grievance procedures. If they're grievance procedures at all, they're generic. So I think, you know, getting into dispute resolution generically in ICANN is not the jobs of the SOs and ACs individually, unless it's just one that deals with, say, GTLD policy. I think we're getting ourselves deep in a rabbit hole by putting this in here. If there's some place, say, generally that we encourage the use of informal procedures for grievance concerns, maybe we could consider it, but I just don't see how it relates to this consideration or to the remit of this group. Thank you.
Okay, so we're close to the end of the call. We've had Cavus in his second point asking why here. We've been having Greg making the point that it should not be here. I've seen support for removal from David McCauley, Tatjana, and Matt, and Erich Schweifhofer. So I think that, and Cheryl, so I think we can for now remove this part, and then I will circulate we'll try in the drafting team to also discuss the cherry picking sentence that was a proposal from Anne during this week, and then by Monday I'll hope to be able to give you a non-contested document from the drafting team. So thank you all very much for your attention and for your work and for keeping this going. We're making progress. We're really now going into to more fine work, so that's really good. I know it's a bit of a long run, but we're really getting there. We're really making the progress. So see you all next week. Bye.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks, everyone. Bye.